Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough with me, your radio talk show host, Dr. Beverly L. Swanson. A talk show of real people with real stories, real testimonies that will inspire you and me to moving forward into our breakthrough. So glad to have you today. Now we're going to move forward to inspiration, empowerment, and breakthrough with Dr. Beverly L. Swanson.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and again, welcome to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough. It's me. I am your radio talk show host, Dr. Beverly L. Swanson, and I am absolutely excited for each and every one of you that are joining in for the broadcast for this very important topic that we have for you today. A rarity indeed. And first of all, for those of you, let's go back. For those of you that are new to the show, let me tell you what it's about. Inspiration, empowerment, and breakthrough is about real people coming together, being transparent, and sharing real stories about their personal trials that they've encountered in their life and how their great faith led to great victories. Now, I'm very excited today because we have two men that are with us in the studio today, and they're doing something that's difficult to do, especially for men. They're being transparent about their personal lives, so in an effort to help our children today that are suffering, and many of them, ladies and gentlemen, suffering silently. Well, they're not only going to be transparent, they're here as a panel today in case any of you would like to call in with questions that you may have. Now, I do have a list of questions that have been emailed to me, but I will be looking for you on the air if you happen to call through. There is so much that we're going to cover today. I don't want to delay. Oh, but I just realized I haven't given you the call-in number. Let me do that. That number, ladies and gentlemen, is 347-202-0120. One more time. It's 347-202-0120. Now, you can also dial in for that number simply to listen to the broadcast. But let me tell you a bit about our guests so that we can get started. Well, first of all, as you may know, some of you may have listened to the broadcast 2 weeks ago, and if you have not, I encourage you to do so because that's what led to the panel today. So I'm going to tell you again about Chad Fletcher. Chad joined us 2 weeks ago sharing his story, and Chad became educated on child sexual abuse, and I love the way he said this, from the front line starting at the age of 7 until he had turned 14. Now, Chad grew up in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and it sounds to me like a suburban town. And in 2010, he went public of his own story on the Oprah Winfrey Show, the episode entitled 200 Men Sexually Abused. And he allowed his story to be profiled for the world to see so that other victims suffering would know that they were not alone. Well, I tell you, we are truly blessed indeed because not only is Chad Fletcher joined us, but we also have with us in the studio Rhett Hackman. No, well, we had to correct that. Dr. Beverly got that all wrong. It is Rhett Hackett. Now, Rhett Hackett ladies and gentlemen, is also a male survivor of child sexual abuse from the age of 12 to 17. Now, he has appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show as well, on the same broadcast, on the same airing, and that was, again, the 200 Men episode, and he was also featured on radio, on television, and in newspapers. Now, I am a bit excited. I am, because this topic is very near and dear to me. For those of you that have followed me for a while, do know that I have a passion for our youth. And this is a very important topic because it is not one that's widely addressed. You see, not only is child sexual abuse a rising problem, but it is also a lead-in to other things, child sex trafficking, selling our children for sex, ladies and gentlemen. We know that our nation is plagued with children that are missing. We have to rise to the awareness, find out what it is that's going on, so that we must talk about it. We must share information. We must all have our eyes and ears open so that we can help protect our children, especially during times such as this. We cannot close our eyes and our ears and turn our heads. So, yes, it is perhaps a difficult subject for some to listen to, but it is a well-needed subject that must be addressed. And I have to tell you this. If you think that it's difficult to hear about, imagine how challenging it may be for our guests to be transparent about their own stories. So I applaud them, I celebrate them, and I greatly thank them for coming on the air today and being transparent and sharing their stories. So, ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, I would like to introduce to you both Rhett Hackett and Chad Fletcher. Gentlemen, are you on the line?
Yes, good afternoon, Dr.
Yes, Berman. We are.
Okay, all righty. Wow, and I got you both talking in harmony. So, Rhett, are you there?
I am here, yes. Thank you, Dr. Beverly.
Oh, yay, there we go. And, Chad, I recognize your voice. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, gentlemen,
I'm not going to delay any longer, but what I didn't get an opportunity to say, that you are both with the Humanity Preservation Foundation, HPF. Rhett, can you please tell us, what is that foundation, what is it about, and what does it do, and if you're the founder or not?
Yes, I'm happy to talk about that. So the Humanity Preservation Foundation, or like what we call HPF for short, is a product of just receiving a blessing in regards to being able to communicate our stories on the Oprah platform and doing something with that in a way that's going to make a difference in this world. So what we do is we focus on three areas, which is child abuse, both physical and sexual, domestic violence, and bullying, to act as an intermediary to services so that those that have been victimized can utilize us in a way for us to do kind of the research process in and participate in their path to healing, as well as in the most important piece, which is educational outreach to prevent such acts from happening. So that's educating parents, teachers, caregivers, as well as students directly on the signs and what to look for and what to do in the event that you have fallen victim to one of these inhumane acts that we just spoke of.
That is amazing. And how do you do that? How are reaching them to educate them?
Okay, so there's a couple different ways. One of them is through direct contact with inside of the school system. So that's presenting directly to students, as well as joining alliance with the Parent Teacher Association, That's really, you know, that's kind of like a different presentation in itself in terms of speaking to parents on, you know, what are the signs and what are the things to look for. As well as, so we've done some speaking circuits in regards to speaking to local business clubs, such as like Rotary International, or participating in the terminology is called Lunch and Learned, where you have businesses and corporations that will invite you in to their facility and you speak to their employees directly on the topic. So whether it is communicating the stories, as you know, both Chad and I have done in terms of speaking to our personal story, or whether it's just going in there and it's being more instructional in regards to, you know, these are the signs, these are the things to look out for, and then having people participate in kind of a Q&A session.
Look at that. I wanted him to have an opportunity to mention that up front, ladies and gentlemen, because I wanted your mind to start being stirred that there are places that you can contact, people that you can contact, so that you can get more information and incorporate that information into your Christian sectors, your schools, and it sounds like they would even consider one-on-one. Now, I want you to hear how difficult this is. I had an email from, we'll just call her Kathy, and Kathy said, it's even harder for men and boys to speak up. Some goes for men with mental illness, and they should be there should be a helpline for men and boys of abuse. This is how unusual it is for men to step up. And again, I applaud them. Another email from Whitney said, you know, how come it is only women? What, because that's all they talk about. Young boys are often victims as well, and it doesn't get talked about enough. So they feel they don't have anywhere to turn. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a wonderful opportunity that these men have presented in our audience today. So we're going to go ahead now and get right into the depth of this interview. You know, Rhett, we had Chad on again 2 weeks ago, but we've not had you. Would you please share your story with our audience?
Absolutely. I grew up in a very small town at the Jersey Shore, and as I always like to joke around and say that it was well before there was a Snooki or MTV or anything like that. And it was one of the communities where kind of everybody knew everybody. It was a very small shore town. Fishing and boating was very popular. And there was a neighbor that lived down the street from my parents' house that he was very friendly. He was, you know, integrated himself in the community. And, you know, he was intriguing to all of us in the neighborhood in regards to, he did a lot of yard sales where, you know, he had just various items of junk that would be appealing to a child. But he also would take us out fishing on his boat. Sometimes he would take us down to Atlantic City and we would, you know, go to the pier or whatever. But there was a grooming process. And for those that might not know what that is the process in which a perpetrator starts to lure a child into activities or give them things of interest so that they can gain their trust. And so, for example, typically he would allow us to, you know, we were allowed to smoke cigarettes in his house. Sometimes he would give us alcohol. Sometimes he would just give us drunk, you know, like just junk to take with us or whatever. And for me, he took the approach that it was a special relationship because he started to allow me to know where he kept his pornographic magazines. And, you know, to an adolescent boy, that's certainly, you know, certainly intriguing. And what I now know is that there's a 6-step process in kind of sexual assault with a child. And number 5 is when they sexualize the relationship, which is that was the process at that particular moment. So he crossed that line that an adult should never cross and a child should never have to bear, and pretty much kind of lured me into the process of performing sexual acts with him. And, you know, told me that if anybody ever found out that we would get in trouble and that, you know, it was perfectly normal and that, you know, we needed to keep it a secret. And that's exactly what I did and continued from the age of 12 until 17, where eventually I had just got my driver's license and he wanted me to take him for a ride in my car. And he did his normal move where he put his hand on the inside of my thigh. And at that moment, I put my hand on top of his and said that I couldn't do it anymore. And that's how it all ended at the age of 17.
Okay. And it started at the age of 12?
Correct.
Now, 12, ladies and gentlemen, is a very, very critical and impressive age and a critical time in both a young man's life as well as a young lady's life. It is a time where we are most confused. Our sexuality is, those hormones are racing like crazy. You're growing up, you're no longer a child, but you are a child, your body's changing. It's a very confusing time. It's funny, you know, I chuckle because my mother used to call it the icky age. She says, oh my gosh, my daughter is in that icky age. Oh.
Definitely.
And,
definitely.
Yes. And, it's, and that is a time where many are preyed upon by those that have lascivious minds because they understand what a time of a confusion that there can be during those ages. Now, as we go forward, I want everyone to understand. Now, these gentlemen are coming on the air, sharing their story, being transparent because they care. We are not approaching this from an atmosphere of psychiatrists, a psychologist. We're not here to get technical. We are here because we have a passion for young people. We have a passion for our youth. We have a passion for our young and adults. And we simply want to make everyone aware of some of the things that they are being encountered by and encountered with, the things that they're dealing with, to help them during these times of confusion, during the times where they are being targeted or groomed, which is one of my questions, actually, groomed by those that are watching. So, again, don't look at this from a psychological or psychiatrist. Don't look at this textbook. Open up your heart and receive what the information that you're giving, because you're getting an information, if you will, priceless, from the inside out. Okay. Now, Chad, are you there? Don't you doze on me?
No, I'm still here.
Okay. Chad, one of the questions was, and gentlemen, if you, as we ask these questions, you know, just jump in and say your name so the audience knows who's addressing them and say, you know, I have this or I'll get that. And certainly both of you, whoever has the answer. Okay. Now, our first question, gentlemen, what are some of the signs that a child is or has been abused?
Go ahead, Chad. I was going to say, go ahead, you go.
All right, no problem. We went over this a couple weeks ago, but there's quite a few signs that you can, you know, start beginning to see that a child has experienced sexual abuse. And like I said, there's quite a few. Some children will experience none. Some will experience quite a few. But you could get anything between a loss of appetite or trouble eating. Troubles with sleeping, having more nightmares, or having fear of a monster in the closet, angry outbursts. A lot of kids will suffer anxiety or depression, low self-esteem. Could display new words for private body parts. Start talking about a new or older friend. Suddenly have money in their pocket at a young age where they don't, you know, they're not working for money. Refuse to talk about a secret he or she has with an adult. Possibly even an older child is sexual abuse can happen with all ages of perpetrators. Could start cutting themselves, burning themselves, excessive crying, wearing layers of clothing, multiple layers. Really, the list goes on and on. But, yeah, like I said, some children will experience no symptoms. And, I mean, but as far as my experience has gone, you know, there's usually some kind of warning signs that the parents, you know, could be aware of, as long as they're paying attention to their children. And, you know, parents know their kids and their attitudes and their personalities. And if you notice a sudden change in it, you know, it's good to start, you know, having that open relationship where you can talk about anything with your children.
Okay. So now, and of course, some of those signs and symptoms could mean other things as well. So,
oh, yeah.
Rhett, can you tell us, please, as you listen to that list that Chad read off, what of those signs was applicable to you? Because I'm really interested in coming from the personal angle. So what signs that he named off was applicable to you, and how did that affect you? Were you trying to send off any of those signals so someone would know?
No, it's a great question. I was actually more so the reverse, where I was doing everything I possibly could to ward off any signs in which somebody may pick up on something was going on. So let me just give you an example. So my, what I call the mask, to hide what was going on, was to perform the best that I possibly could in everything that I did. So it was to do well in school. It was to, you know, if there was some sort of club or something that to join in school, I would make sure that I wanted to be part of that. Because my fear was that if you saw a flaw, you would be able to connect the dots and see what that, you know, you would tie it into the abuse that was going on at that particular time. One of the things that is on the list, though, is, you know, to a degree, I went from being a little bit more extroverted to becoming more introverted through the process of that, especially as it related to being in the presence of men. So that would have been a sign, you know, kind of like a little bit of a red flag. But the reason why I hesitate in saying that is because, as you had already mentioned, the icky age is something that, you know, that tends to happen anyway. It brings up to the point that you had said before that is why this age range is the target for perpetrators, because it can easily be dismissed. And I will tell you that I was very good at demonstrating that everything was okay, for fear of somebody finding out the secret.
Okay. Wow,
so,
that is
so
different.
Yeah, definitely.
Continue.
Here's the trick. Yeah, the trickery is that when it's somebody that's a younger child, they might not have the same amount of control over their emotions, which is why you may see those outbursts, or they all of a sudden start wetting the bed again. You know, those are the kind of things that can stand out. But, you know, other than, you know, I mean, I've worked with teens that have, you know, suffered abuse, and they did go down the cutting in that range. So, that's obviously a very clear sign.
Obviously, and very overt. Now, I see I have a caller in the studio. We need to check to see if they have a question. So stand by, gentlemen. Caller with a number ending in 1260. If you have a question for our panel, you can go ahead and ask your question now, or if not, we'll just mute out the line. Do you have a question for our panel?
Well, I'd first like to say congratulations for speaking out. I know that there have been periodic groups of men and women over the years, actually over the decades, who have spoken out. My question, and I'm a survivor of this, I'm actually a survivor of military sexual slavery in the 80s and 90s. And yes, that was going on, and these victims are being silenced through the Veterans Administration as well as through the networks. My question is, do you know of any real organizations that are not just the policy writers? Because what I'm finding is that as I have tried to reach out to organizations throughout this country to find real help from those in my community, and that includes police forces, because remember, these predators are huge networks. They're in our schools. They can be teachers, superintendents, coaches, peers. They can be clergy, sadly, even family members. There's a lot of different ways in which victims, how they show up and how these networks know how to silence children and or adults who are put through these things. But one of the things I'm finding most egregious is often that the policy writers for the human sexual slavery and trafficking issues themselves have never lived it, so while they're writing these policies, there are huge holes in them, loopholes, that will keep these systems going. And my question is, how do I join with you, because I'm a survivor of this, and I actually spoke up and helped even get rape victims onto Oprah's show, when in fact most of these victims of rape in our military were in the beginning stages rape victims, but were being subjected to human sexual slavery trafficking. They were in the queue, if you say, it is what it really was. And if you go back and you do the history in this country, and it's not that far past, there's a great deal of proliferation of allowance of these things, both in our Congress and our government, aid immunity laws for federal employees, including our military, who perpetuated this kind of abuse. And the documentation is clearly out there. And so how do I get attached to you gentlemen and to really help push this issue? Because this is destroying lives, and it doesn't matter what professionally people have become. I knew a woman doctor who was subjected to this, attorneys who went to Ivy League schools that were subjected to this. I have several advanced degrees, and my life has been ruined. In fact, I've had retaliation from even being able to work and blacklisted because I was trying to recover from what happened to me when I left the military honorably, because I could no longer participate or look the other way in the corruption. So I apologize for the long diatribe, but...
Well, Rhett, this is a question for you, please.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, let me just say thank you for calling in and then sharing such a personal, you know, story, because, you know, both Chad and I can definitely speak to an understanding of the impact. And your question definitely is multi-layered. So I'm going to try the best I can to kind of answer it. Ironically, you are so on point in regards to that this has been happening for decades. And, you know, as people's voices like yours and mine and Chad's and anybody else that has come forward, it allows others to know that they're not alone. And so we're starting to learn and hear more stories like this. In regards to resources, I'm not 100% sure that I understood whether you were talking about resources for somebody to go out and find healing, or whether you were talking about resources to connect with individuals for to speak with lawmakers or items such as that. So if you could just kind of clarify what you meant by that, that would help me.
Well, again, I've got a great deal of documentation showing that these kind of abuses have been allowed in our government for decades. This goes back to, you know, depending on what system you look at. Through the Catholic Church, the 3rd and the 11th century, they all knew that rape was happening by clergy. And again, this is not any one religious systems, but there is a great deal more historic propensity of this than what anybody really wants to know. And
sure.
So the difficulty I have is, A, I want to be able to contact you. I've actually sent an email to the host, so if you can give these gentlemen off air my phone number. Quite honestly, I'm actually being prevented from reporting my, because the networks in this country are so widespread, I'm being denied the right to even report these criminal abuses into my police department because, sadly, some of my police were involved in doing this to me, as well as a sheriff. So, and I know who these people are, but the difficulty is, you know, the whole attitude of, can you prove it? You can prove it because, number one, victims who have tried to speak up about this are being so brutalized and denied the right to recover. So as far as the clarification, I'm looking both for resources for myself because I'm tired of any time I go out in public. I am often re-traumatized and brutalized by these criminals that are too busy making lots of money. And they don't even have to make cash money. It can actually be done quid pro quo. Quid pro quo is a means of they will get benefits, promotions, they'll get jobs, be able to have arrest records erased so that they can buy companies or have companies and have those bonded. This is what's happening. And so for the victims, and again, when we're talking about human trafficking, look, too, at how few of victims. There is no national organization that is yet established where victims are able to come together safely because there is such a move to shatter them and or, sadly, to even kill them. Like I said, my entire life has been destroyed. My marriage was destroyed. A partner that I was going to marry was murdered, and I was told to shut my mouth. It would be me. I've been threatened with being put in prison, being found a way to put me in prison. You know, no one should have to live in a country that says it's honest and ethical with this kind of abuse. And a lot of the times it has everything to do with people's perception that human trafficking is only in the streets, the back streets of this country. It is in every level of our country and our government and internationally. And this is the sad thing, is that these victims, who often are given mind-altering drugs, they are re-traumatized, threatened, intimidated, and brutalized, have virtually nowhere to go. And often these people, so for instance, you can hear of organizations such as NAMBLA, the Boy Love Man, or the Man Love Boy groups and stuff like that. They actually have the ability to, under the First Amendment rights, have more rights than the victims. And if you go out online and you look up victims for sexual abuse, you'll find more attorneys that will protect the rapist and the human traffickers than you can find helping the victims. That's how bad the system is.
Well, you know, I'm going to interject here for a moment. You know, ladies and gentlemen, you have tuned in to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough with Dr. Beverly L. Swanson, and we have in our panel today Mr. Rhett Hackman and Chad Fletcher of they are of the Humanity Preservation Foundation, and they are sharing their stories and their insight on personal experiences from child sexual abuse from young age through teenage years. So thank you for joining us on the air. And to my guests here that from Extension 1260, I understand exactly what you are saying. You are certainly not far-fetched and off at all. First of all, I'm a veteran of the United States Air Force myself, 10 years. And also, you are speaking a lot of sex trafficking. This is new awareness for those within the United States. And with new awareness, it's always a little bit of anxiety and hush-hush. But we're having shows like this to bring out the awareness of people nationwide, and I do have an international audience, to understand that our children are being victimized in multiple areas through their young adult, through their latter years. Why? Because of the effects of this horrific disorder amongst people that are against children. So I want to thank you for taking the time and calling in and regurgitating the valuable information that you have. I will check for your email, and I will definitely make sure that Mr. Hackman is aware of your information, as he has had an opportunity to digest what you shared to him. I'm sure ideas will pop up in his mind on how you could perhaps be an aid to their organization. I know Chad is now the executive director of a chapter in Michigan. So who knows where this may lead, but it would not have been an opportunity if you had not picked up the phone and called, and I thank you for that. I thank you for that. And before I let you go off the air, I want you to know, if you go to my website, and it's drbeverlylswanson.com, you'll find that women, my specialty is women. My background does include the Air Force. So I have clients that are veterans, and these are some of the things that they're discussing with me and we're working through. And I welcome, if you have anyone that my services can be an aid to, if you would please give them that information. You could also send me an email there. The email address is down there for the contacts, and I welcome hearing from you. We're going to have to move forward, but I definitely wanted to thank you and let you know how much I appreciate your boldness and your ability to just share.
Thank you. And I will send you information because, again, there were 57 questions that were allowed in the military in the 1970s that allowed for the rape and abuse, no matter what level. 1970s, 57 questions. And those 57 questions were rolled out through our Congress in 1985 and trained across this country to attorneys that became future judges and children, or excuse me, and police officers. And those 57 questions, you have to score below a zero to be considered telling the truth that you had been raped.
Okay, but we're going to have to move forward, though, so the gentlemen, yeah, they can get their questions answered. So I do look forward to the your contact information, okay?
Thank you.
God bless you. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for the time that you took with our caller, and I have another question that I'd like to present to you. And first of all, gentlemen, are you with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
one of the questions was, what do you mean by new words for private parts? And any one of you.
Well, now this is Chad. I guess, you know, what I mean is you know, everybody growing up, as far as I knew, most people have, you know, different names as their potty training and this and that, but if the kids came back around and say the perpetrator would be, you know, come up with their own names for certain body parts, maybe as in code or just in general, you know, their own different name. And if the kid comes back around saying something that you've never heard or, you know, just in that line of where it would be, they came up with a different name for their body part than maybe what it was called growing up as a child.
Okay. So as we train our children to identify certain body parts, or even for something as like going to the potty, like some may, you know, use potty, some may use bathroom, some may use poo-poo, this sort of thing. So you're saying, yeah, if suddenly the child starts using different names, that should be an antenna up for the parents. Like, where did you get this from? Why are you calling it that? To ask questions. Am I hearing correctly?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it could be another child at school, but it also could be that there is some sort of abuse going on, and it's another adult, you know, telling them a different name for it.
And Dr. Beverly, this is Rhett. If I could just add something on to here, one of the things when we are speaking with parents is that we encourage them to reference body parts by their rightful name, so that, you know, we're calling a penis, and we're calling a vagina. And part of the reason for that is because of what, you know, Chad is talking about, as, you know, people outside of our homes are integrating into our children's life, that type of terminology, you know, comes into play. Like if somebody says something, calls it something different, and that surfaces. But also, more importantly, is if something has happened to a child where they have been perpetrated, as they are speaking to it, that they know to call it by the rightful body part name, it will help down the line in regards to criminal cases. And a very quick example of that is if somebody in the household calls, you know, and I've heard stories of this, a vagina, a pocketbook, and she says that the neighbor down the street was touching her pocketbook, law enforcement is not going to necessarily know that, right, that a pocketbook is a vagina. And who's to say that the perpetrator can say, well, yes, she did bring a pocketbook over, and I did touch that, you know, but I don't know what she's talking about in regards to touching her private part that she calls a pocketbook, you know. So that's why, you know, if you call it by – and we call all of our body parts other than those areas by their rightful name. So a finger is a finger, an arm is an arm, a leg is a leg. It should be treated exactly the same way in the areas that are our private parts, so that, you know, we're calling it by the rightful name.
I like that. I mean, then if suddenly, again, that child starts saying something else, a parent should say, they should start asking questions. As parents, we need to ask questions of our children when things seem out of the ordinary. I have to tell you, I mean, first of all, gentlemen, I'm from New Jersey as well.
Yay, that's me.
Yay. And I have to tell you, when I grew up, my mother knew everything that was going on, my mother and father, but you know, the matriarch was mom. She knew everything what was going on. There was no, I don't know what's in your room. She checked rooms, phone calls. There were no secrets in our household. You want a secret, it's you be 18 and you move out. That's when your secrets get to start. So we're in a time and age today where parents don't know what their children are doing. They think it's invading their privacy if they go in their room and this and that. And I cannot comprehend that. Yet they're unnerved and they're shocked when suddenly things start happening, like the violence in our schools. We must take responsibility for our children, for their lives, and for their failures and their positive achievements. We have to take responsibility for that. Get in there and ask questions. When there's something that raises your eyebrows, you have a right to know. And then if things start coming out and you know you have not taught them this, then we need to jump on that. What's going on? Why? Where'd you get it? Who's telling you these things? Not intimidating, but in casual conversation and love, so that they feel comfortable talking to us. Please listen to what he's saying. Talk to your children and get rid of the goo-goo gaga baby talk and start calling things what they are, so that there is no secrets and shame about body parts. It is what it is. It's another part of the anatomy, just like he said, a finger, a toe. If we take the secrecy out of it and the shame out of it, then perhaps perpetrators can't come and say, keep it a secret. It's a secret. No.
Spot on. And that's another word, too, that when we, you know, discussing with parents and with children, parents, how to establish a no-secret home, and also when you're speaking with children, what is the difference between a secret and a surprise? Because that's, you know, often that is very confusing to a child because, you know, daddy's throwing mommy a surprise party, it's a secret. You know, well, let's take that terminology out of it and say, well, it's a surprise, because a surprise always leads to somebody finding out in the end. A secret is something that somebody wants to keep contained and nobody will ever find out. And so if we get children to recognize the difference between the two, then when an adult says to them, this is our secret, they can then turn around and say, well, my mom and dad said that we don't have secrets in our household, so I need to go tell them. That's kind of like the difference.
Ah, perfect. Thank you for making that clear, the difference between the two. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take just a minute break here to give our guests a chance to get some water, and we shall be right back to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough. Oh, boy, I have been talking and have been on mute. Dear, I want to welcome everybody back to Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough. Now, we are here in the studio with Rhett Hackett and Chad Fletcher of Humanity Preservation Foundation, HPF. They've been sharing their personal stories, being very transparent about their lives and what they've endured as a child and to their teenage years. And we are very thankful for the nuggets of wisdom that they have been sharing with us. Now, listen, the broadcast, when it's concluded, is immediately stored in our archive, so you can listen to it over and over again to get the nuggets that you need to have the tools, additional tools in your satchel. We've even heard from a guest that shared that sexual abuse is even just as difficult and hard in our adult years in the life that she and the things that she's experienced and in her life, even in the military. So we are very thankful that these gentlemen are coming forth and opening up the eyes of people to be aware of what is going on so that people can seek the help that they need and lives can be restored, enriched, and changed. Now, gentlemen, if you're ready, I have another question that was emailed. Are we all set?
I'm ready.
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Okay, here we go. What are the signs that an adult may be using their relationship with a child for sexual reasons? What are the signs that an adult may be using their relationship with a child for sexual reasons?
Okay, so here, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, but we'll certainly, you know, try to spell it out. So that people can get a better understanding of it. There are six signs or six phases in regards to, a perpetrator. And I think that's am I correct? That's kind of the question that we're looking for?
Well, that actually was another question. This one is, you know, adults can be, well, you know what, I'm just going to be real. Adults can be very sneaky in their intentions. So what are the signs that adults, I'm going to break it down another way, can I? What are the signs that the adults have one thing on their agenda, but they're presenting another thing to a child? They're trying to build a relationship for their own personal sexual agenda, yet a child thinks that they're just trying to build a relationship. So what are some of the signs that an adult gives off, unaware to parents, because as you know, a lot of times this is in the family. It could be an uncle, it could be an aunt. So what are the signs that adult is giving off to the child to make it seem like they're trying to be their friend or just trying to be a close relative, But in all actuality, they have a completely other agenda so that parents can look out for this. Even in our own families, we have to be real. This happens in our own families. So what do parents need to look out for?
Sure,
like
absolutely.
Rhett said earlier, I mean, even with Rhett's case, you know, if there's, you know, so it be a neighbor maybe that's, you know, maybe doesn't have any kids of his own in the neighborhood who, you know, is giving kids money or has a lot of stuff that kids are interested in. He's always having kids over at the house. Like, to me, it would be completely weird to ever let one of my children go over my neighbor's house who's, you know, single, has no kids. It's just not, you know, I guess maybe the situation I'm in, a lot of people don't like to think that kind of stuff happens, but, you know, they say at least 75% of perpetrators or 75% of children that are abused, they do know their perpetrator, and I believe it's more along the lines of 90%. So 90% of the time it's going to be somebody that the child does know, and they're going to use that power with that child to, you know, mess with their head a little bit. Like I said, use money, pornographic materials for a teenage boy who, you know, coming into age at that age, that's something he's going to really be into. So, you know, everything Rhett had said earlier about his perpetrator is basically the signs you definitely want to look out for.
Well, you know, growing up, my mother used to tell us, she said, do not sit on any man's lap. I don't care whether he's your uncle or do not do it. Do not sit on men's, especially as they get older, you know, do not do it. What about you, right? What do you think?
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point in regards to just a couple different things to touch upon in regards to this. One of them is that if there's an adult within the circle of that child's life that is that individual that typically enjoys spending more time with children than they do with adults, then that's a flag right there. Yeah. And the other thing is, as parents, we need to respect our children's skills in setting boundaries and supporting them with that. So what I mean by that is, because some people can, you know, kind of be like, wait, what? Is that if your son or your daughter does not want to give grandpa a kiss or does not want to give a hug or does not want to sit on grandma on grandpa's lap, then I'm not saying that grandpa is the perpetrator, but what it does is it sets the tone that the child has the ability to say, no, I don't want to be in contact with an individual. And that transcends to somebody else as they move along, so that if in the future a perpetrator, you know, picks up on the fact that mom or dad insists that you need to give Uncle Joe a kiss goodbye or a kiss hello or whatever, then that perpetrator, as they have integrated with the family, knows that, you know, they can certainly use that to their own advantage. Say, well, you know how your mom says you have to kiss Uncle Joe. Well, that's pretty much what I'm doing. You have to kiss me, otherwise I'm going to tell your mom or your dad.
That is excellent.
Yeah, so as we teach children how to establish boundaries, that is a skill set that will take them so much further in life as they go through high school, as they go on their own to college, because we've heard about college campuses where, you know, there are people being sexually assaulted left and right. And, you know, it all stems from the fact that, you know, you need to be able to set your own boundaries. And if we don't teach children that from the onset, how are we supposed to expect them to do that as they become adolescents and young adults?
Wow. That is so powerful, so powerful. You know, I want to dive right into this again. Earlier, you gave us a definition of groomed, being groomed as a child. And it's very important to me, if you will, to repeat that definition and then slide right into that six-step process that you were talking about.
Absolutely. So let's talk about grooming. So grooming is the process in which a perpetrator utilizes some form of, whether it's objects or privileges, to gain the child's interest and trust. So those objects can include anything that would interest a child, that just, you know, whether it's being given to them, or I also, and I always bring this up because this is kind of how it was based under my own personal circumstances, was allowing me to engage in adult activities such as being able to smoke inside of his house, providing us with alcohol, showing us pornographic magazines. Those things, those are adult activities that are taking place. And in retrospect, it's almost like a validation process, so that the perpetrator almost validates that, okay, well, you've participated in those adult activities. Now let's take it a step further and have you participate in these adult activities, which are then some sort of sexual engagement.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Excellent nugget. Okay. Now, how does that relate to these six steps?
So that's when I am in the process of pulling them up, because I want to make sure that we kind of like go through them and, you know, people aren't confused by, you know, the process. So let me just bring up the sheet that I have, and that will help me out.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, again, in our studio today, we have Mr. Chad Fletcher and Rhett Hackett of Humanity Preservation Foundation, HPF. Both of these gentlemen were on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and they were sharing their testimony of their life along with 198 other men coming out in the opening. And sharing people that they have been abused sexually. Now, this is something that's not talked about much, not from coming from a men's perspective, but it does indeed happen. And we want you to be aware. They're also sharing amazing nuggets of things to look out for in your family, with your children, and in the children in our community. Now, while he's looking that up, and you let me know when you have it, Rhett, I want you
Absolutely.
To know, as I was growing up, the whole concept was it took a community to raise a child. Trust me, everyone knew what we did in school before we got home. And I heard you're going to get it when you get home, all the way home. Can we open up our eyes as a community once again and everyone embrace our youth, our young adults? This is our future. This is our future. We have a right. We have an expectation to protect our future. And the children of today are our future of tomorrow. Rhett, are you ready?
Yeah, just about. And it's funny that you reference it that way, because part of the name of the Humanity Preservation Foundation is derived from that, because at the core of humanity is our children, because that's what that next group of children are going to carry it forward. And so if for some reason that group is being victimized, how can we expect for them to grow and to prosper? So, and having said that, so let me just talk real quickly about the six steps that are going through six phases of sexual abuse. The first one is targeting the victim. So a perpetrator, there is actually a methodical process in regards to them looking for somebody that they would be able to victimize. And just a couple of quick examples are if they are looking for a household where maybe there's no father figure, or it's a broken home, or if this child is being bullied in the neighborhood and they kind of see that child being kind of on their own in an introverted way. So then comes gaining the victim's trust or the family's trust. So as Chad had referenced, that in 90% of the cases, the victim knows who their perpetrator is. So this is not the stranger that's lurking inside of the bushes, as we were all told when we were younger. This is people that
Yes.
are integrating with our children every single day. So that's how they gain the victim's trust, and that leads very nicely into the third phase, which is fulfilling a need. So what I mean by that is, it's great that this individual, you know, oh, I'll babysit your children. Oh, your son needs a ride, I'll give him a ride. Or, you know, my son is on the same soccer team as this individual, I'll take them to practice. And that's how you kind of gain that trust. And in the process of that, what that does is it is allowing then if something is to be said that this person is doing this, then people can say, oh, well, you know, Charlie, he's a nice guy. He wouldn't do that. So, and then the next thing comes, the fourth piece of that is isolating the target. So once they have that individual, the victim that they want to perpetrate against, then they work towards isolating that individual. So, you know, hey, Jimmy, your mom or your dad's not home. Why don't you just stay at my house? Or in circumstances where, you know, maybe they have children of their own, they are continually opening up the door to say, oh, well, why don't we have a sleepover? Why don't we have a pool party? Things like that, where they're always trying to get that individual into their particular area. And then number five is the one that I talked about the most, which I said sexualizing the relationship, which I'm gonna skip on that for a second and I'll come right back to it. But then the last one is maintaining control. And what I mean by that is by either saying to the child, you know, this is our secret and you can't tell, or sometimes that maintaining the control is a little bit more direct by saying, if you tell anybody, I'm going to do this to your sibling, or I'm going to, you know, your dad, I'm your dad's boss. So if you tell anybody, I'm going to fire your father, and then, you know, he's not going to have a job. Those are the types of things so that they can maintain control. So the reason why I bounced real quick and I said, let's just skip number five, because all of them except for number five can fall into the circumstances of everyday life. You can have a neighbor that's going to babysit your child. You can have that person that, you know, there's always a pool party house. Or, you know, you can have it where, you know, they're integrating and they're gaining the trust of the family. So what we try to focus on when I'm speaking with students or when I'm talking to parents is number five, sexualize a relationship. If we teach children that there are these people here, mom, dad, doctor, whatever, those are the only ones that should be talking to you about things that are of a sexual nature, then if they recognize the fact that somebody outside of that circle is now speaking to that, that is a red flag that they need to go tell their mom or their dad. Or we can call it the uh-oh moment, when they realize that something is not right with the circumstances because nobody should be talking to me about this. And if I can just reflect real quick to my own personal circumstances, I can tell you in retrospect, I know the exact moment that my perpetrator did that, and that was he was very much infatuated, wondering whether I had lost my virginity or if I had slept with any of the girls in the neighborhood, and asked me several times. I didn't recognize it as him sexualizing the relationship. I just thought he was asking. But if somebody had educated me on that, it would have been my flag.
Wow. That is why this broadcast is so important. Something as small as that, and there was an agenda behind it.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, I want you to take a look. Think back at your own situation during the time that you were going through your abuse, and tell me, each of you, what does silent tears mean to you?
Chad, I'll let you go first on that.
Would you say silent tears?
So, yes. Think back at the time. Go back to where you were experiencing these. And tell me, what does silent tears mean to you?
I guess silent tears, I mean, I definitely had plenty of silent tears when I was, being abused by my father. And I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about it. And... I couldn't go to my mom. I felt like if even when I did go, it was, you know, I was trying to break up the family and ruin the family. And just that feeling of being completely alone. And like Rhett said earlier, we were always told that sexual abuse was going to be, you know, it'd be a stranger who you didn't know and who, you know, kidnap you from the mall. But just the fact of that it was my father, and he was supposed to teach me everything as a man, what I was supposed to know growing up. There was definitely a lot of, for me, silent tears of just being by myself and crying and not being able to express, what was bothering me. even today, it's almost like I'm used to it. So I feel like I can't cry in front of people just because I'm so used to crying, you know, to myself that it was just, it's bad as a kid. And like Rhett said, if someone would have educated me and I would have even thought there was one more man out there that was going through what I went through, I would have felt, 100 times better for sure.
No, I thank you so much. I want to apologize. I know that it's a difficult question, you know, to actually go back in your mind in that time period and the vulnerable times where, you know, when you did cry silently to yourself where no one could see. But I really want the audience to understand the painful impact that this has on children that are being victimized when they, you know, they look up to adults and how they're being confused. What are they supposed to do? How do they defend themselves? Who do they talk to? Who can they trust? I really want the audience to understand the pain that they go through for those people that are still dealing with ignorance. An ignorant mindset thinking, what is the big deal? You know, it's only sex. That ignorance has got to stop. I want them to understand the pain that is felt. So I apologize that it may be a difficult question, and I thank you for your candor. So, Brett, what does silent tears mean to you?
Sure. Well, I can... let me tell you that for myself, to specifically, to say this is the point in which I cried, or I will say mourned over this, I will tell you that the first tear was shed at the age of 36. 36 years old. So take that from 12 years old all the way to 36, and everything from that point up until that moment were internal tears as it related directly to the abuse that was going on. That's a really long time to stay silent. And that is exactly what perpetrators rely on, because silence is what fuels perpetrators in victimizing children.
Wow. So... here we go. So if you have a child that really has no one to tell, gentlemen, no one that they can trust, so they never have a release from this pain, and they can carry it literally a lifetime, and robbing them of their present and their future and a quality of life is what you're telling me.
That is correct. That is definitely, and so that is the driving force behind the educational outreach that HPF does. And this is what I say to people when I talk about this, is that we as an organization, or as my own individual here, I can't get into the mind of a perpetrator. There's just no way that I can do it because, there's no way for me to fix that. But I can get into the mind of a child and plant the seeds and give them the tools that they need to protect themselves, of which one of them is that it is their birthright as they come into this world for them to feel safe. It's our responsibility as a society to make sure that that happens. And if there is a child that feels unsafe, then they need to tell somebody that this is what's happening, this is why they feel unsafe, and you keep telling it until somebody believes you over and over again. And when you said if the child is all alone, so there's an acronym that we use within the organization called CAMP, and it stands for Child Advocacy Management Planning, which is basically sitting down with the child, sitting down with the parents, and really saying, okay, who are the people that are connected with your child in their everyday life, and who are the ones that they can go to in the event that there's an issue or a problem because sometimes you might not feel comfortable telling mom or dad. Sometimes it could be mom or dad that's doing it, but there has to be somebody that they can identify with that this is who you can go to if you have a problem. And let's have more than one or two of them. And let's really sit down and have a conversation because, honestly, we plan all kinds of things. We plan our lunches. We plan our dinners. We plan our vacations. How often are parents sitting down with their children and saying, okay, these are the people that are within our children's lives, and how do we, you know, get them to recognize that these are the ones that, you know, and it's a great opportunity to have a conversation with our kids on this particular topic.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I have two questions, gentlemen, that I need to ask. And first of all, I want to let the person know that chatted that in. There are no stupid questions, and I thank you for asking them. So the first question, gentlemen, was, who sexually abuses children? Can you name off who sexually abuses children? I think people will be surprised.
I mean, it's really...
It's not necessarily, like you said, it's not necessarily someone hiding in the bush. So let's give them a list.
I mean, it's really anybody you can think of. You know, your best friend, your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, your uncle, your aunt, grandparents, neighbors, priests, pastors, custodians. I mean, anybody, any occupation, police officers. I mean, like that lady caller earlier, it's crazy. It's so hard as anybody to prosecute against anyone in these situations without having, as you said, proof. And when they're police officers, it's even harder because they have their buddies. And I don't know where, you know, not saying police officers alone, but any groups of people, I don't know how they find that many people that think the same way and are, you know, enjoy doing stuff like that to children. It's just disgusting. So
yeah,
there
you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, it sounds like anyone, correct? Gentlemen,
that is
anyone.
Correct.
Anybody.
And
so
anybody that has access to your children has the potential to be a perpetrator. And, you know, as a parent who would be vigilant, then if you think of it in those ways, then you are one step ahead of the perpetrator.
Yes, that's why awareness is so important. The word says, my people perish because of lack of knowledge. Awareness is so important. Now, her next question was, I don't understand. Why don't children tell? Right.
I will definitely take that. So,
that was her question. That was her question. She said, and like I said, there's no stupid questions, ladies and gentlemen. She says, I don't understand. Why don't children tell?
Okay. So let's kind of break that down in the most simplest of ways. And I'll reference back to that grooming process. So that is part of the process in regards to gaining the level of secrecy with the particular child, because in most cases they have lured that child into doing other things that maybe mom or dad would not approve of, which then sets the stage for the individual to then say, okay, the perpetrator to say to the child, if we don't continue this relationship, I'm going to tell them that you were smoking in my house. I'm going to tell them that you had alcohol. And to that same point, what ends up happening is, so now the first point in which the child has been victimized in a sexual way, whether it be subtle or not, is going to take that child off guard. And because children have not been educated in what to do, therefore they're going to be speechless about what has happened. So now what happens is they're back in the presence of the same adult that perpetrated them. The perpetrator does it again. And now what happens is, well, Mary, you didn't say anything the first time, so therefore that's why we're doing it the second time. And if you don't continue to, I'm going to tell your mother and father that you have been behaving inappropriately. We have to keep in mind that these are children. These are not adults that are able to process what is happening to them. In many cases, the child has checked out in regards to, you know, they kind of like separate themselves from their mind in regards to what is going on at that particular time, and that is just that is a survival technique. So they're not always, you know, it's easy for us as adults to say, okay, well, this happened to me, so therefore I'm going to tell. And believe me, perpetrators are very, very skilled at doing this. They know when they first start off, they're not going to do something that's going to hurt the child, because in most cases, we know that kids, when they get hurt, they have a boo-boo, they tell mom or dad that it's hurt. So that's why it's usually very subtle along the process.
Thank you so much for breaking that down for her. Thank you so much. It's so important for everyone to understand that this is a subject we know it's not often talked about, so you don't get those answers to the questions that you have. So that if you have them, feel free to ask them. That's why these gentlemen are here. Now, all this boils down to everything that we've discussed. They've made you aware. They've shared their stories. You know signs to look for in both the perpetrator and the child itself. Now, gentlemen, this question came through. What should I do if I know a child is or has been abused? So you've alerted some attention on the air, and they need to know, what should I do if I know a child is or has been abused?
Chad, do you want me to take this, or?
Yeah, go ahead, Red. It's no problem.
Okay. So the easiest answer is that you can make an anonymous call, and you can report it to. All you have to do is just call 1-800-4-A-CHILD, and you can leave an anonymous call in, and give the circumstances. You don't have to give your name. You're not obligated to. So that's one. That's one that's pretty simple. You can call your own local law enforcement and let them know. And that is what we encourage parents to do. And, I have been presented with people saying, well, what if I'm wrong? But really what's more importantly, when I turn around and I say to people, well, what if you're correct? And that's really the most important piece to it. Because if there's nothing going on in the household, then we really don't have anything to worry about. But if you have a sign, most times you pretty much know by the point in which you're getting the signal that something is going on, your instinct is probably correct. And it really, you are talking about setting the stage for the child for the rest of their life, and God knows what kind of life that they're going to live if this continues on.
Thank you for that, Rhett. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I said earlier in the broadcast at the onset that these gentlemen are joining us from Humanity Preservation Foundation, HPF, and I've mentioned that name through the broadcast. Now, I promised that once again I would have them talk about that foundation so that you understand that they not only have shared their stories on the Oprah Show and even with us now, and Chad, just several weeks ago, and again, I invite you to go back and listen to that broadcast, but they have dedicated their lives within this organization to bring awareness across many sectors. So we're going to have Rhett once again tell you about the foundation and what it does, why it's so important, and how to reach them in case you may be interested. I don't know. I'm throwing this out there. Maybe you want a chapter in your city, in your state. Maybe, just like the caller that was on the line, you'd like to volunteer your time, your expertise. But this is definitely, or maybe you need them to come and speak in your arenas to alert and make your children aware. So Rhett, can you please go over once again about HPF, what it is and what it does, and how to contact you?
Sure, absolutely. So HPF stands for Humanity Preservation Foundation. We are a recognized 501c3 not-for-profit organization, and our goal is pretty much broken down into two areas. One of them is to act as an intermediary to services for individuals who have been victimized. And what does that actually mean? So we never take the place of law enforcement or counseling or anything like that, but our goal or our mission is to direct people to services so that if you have been victimized, that you can find the proper healing. And I use my own personal circumstances to say that when I was in the thick of it and trying to find resources and trying to find what was my legal recourse and what can I do, you're not thinking with the clearest of minds. And, you know, certainly we want to help out individuals and say, okay, you know, we want to be able to help you out and say, you know, this is the organization that you can go to within your own particular area, or based upon experience from other individuals. You know, I've worked with some ladies before that have told me their story and say, you know, this was the counseling service or the support group that I used, and it was phenomenal. It was fantastic. Because we really want, you know, you really want people that are right there on the front line of this. The second piece, and I'm not going in order because this is really the most important part, is the educational outreach to educate both parents, caregivers, teachers, and students, children, on the topic of what, you know, we can put it under the umbrella of interpersonal violence, but making sure that children are kept safe under the three areas that we focus on, which is child abuse, both physical and sexual, bullying, as well as domestic violence. And if somebody is looking to reach us, they can go to our website. It's at humanitypreservationfoundation.org, and they can click on the contact tab and reach us via email, or they can email us directly. Like mine, it's rhackett@humanitypreservation.org. And, you know, so whether that's if you want to ask us a question, if you want to find out how you can possibly help, if you want to make a donation to the organization, or most importantly, if you are looking to have somebody come to either your local school or to a club that you belong to, we would be happy to try and make that happen, because that is the number one goal, is to get out there and to have these conversations and educate people on the topic.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. It is my sincere hope, ladies and gentlemen, that you do listen to the broadcast once again. The information that both of these gentlemen have shared and their expertise has been priceless, simply invaluable. And it is important that you have the time to write it down so that, again, you have that information with you and you utilize it within your families, within the community, with our children. Our children deserve to be safe. They deserve an opportunity to be a child and grow into the viable adults that they were predestined by our Creator to be. I am so thankful for what they have shared with us. Who takes the time to literally open up the closet of their lives and openly share that with people that they don't know, except for those that really have a heart to save and protect others. And I commend you both for that. It is my sincere hope, again, that you not just go back and listen to the broadcast, but you contact them. Send a donation. Do whatever you can do to support an organization that is stepping out for our young adults. Someone must do that. Someone must help those that are shedding silent tears. My heart was breaking when I heard Rhett say from age 12, I think he said 36, he did not cry until then. How devastating that can be for anyone. Look at the years that he spent harboring that inside of him. Can we not come together and learn what we need to learn, to give a child a right to live, to have a viable life, to have a healthy family and life themselves, isn't it time that we open our eyes and open our ears to those around us? Save a life. Save our future. Save a child. I want to thank you all that have tuned in for this broadcast, and I look forward to seeing you on the air with me every Wednesday. This was a longer show, but every Wednesday from 11 to 12 Pacific Standard Time on Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough, as again, we bring you real stories about real people that have great trials, great faith, leading to a great victory. If you would like to contact Dr. Beverly because you have a story that fits that, you can do so by emailing me at info@drbeverlylswanson.com. That's info@drbeverlylswanson.com. I always encourage you to take a look at the website at drbeverlylswanson.com. There are services there for everyone, for consultation, for counseling, wisdom messages, books, MP3s. There is so much there for wisdom and inspiration to help you stay focused on what your goal is. And if you're not sure, then to help you open your eyes to that gift in you and the dream that I know you have for your future. Don't forget, I have a new teaching series just for ladies, just for us women, and it's called Truth Be Told, to help bring forth the past that is robbing you from your future, and let's identify those little foxes and eradicate it and move you into your breakthrough for your new well-deserved life. This is our year, and it is time for us to ready ourselves by being in position to embrace it. So, Chad, Rhett, I want to, again, I've said it many times through the broadcast, and it's only because it is coming from my heart. And I want to thank you both for the time that you've availed to the audience and myself, for sharing your heart, your expertise. I appreciate you both.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Is there any final comment that you'd like to give before we check out of the studio?
I'll just say one more thing just real quick, and that is if you are an individual that is living in a circumstance in which you're being victimized, you have every right to come out of that and tell somebody your story and keep telling it until somebody believes you and gets you into a safer place.
Thank you, Rhett. And Chad, did you...
Have a final comment, repeat of what Rhett said, and I just appreciate your time and everything you do and for having us on, and I appreciate Rhett for taking his time as well.
You are very welcome, and look at that, ladies and gentlemen. They started the broadcast with you, with your children on their mind, and he ended it the same, with your children on their mind and all that are in situations that are not the situation that is for you. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you for joining us at Inspiration, Empowerment, and Breakthrough. And we'll see you next week.